Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to In the Spotlight. I am your host, Tamika Patrice Kane. Three times a month, we bring you the authors with the most flaming pens in the literary arena, the publishers dedicated to producing the hottest books, and industry professionals who are sure to take your books to the next level. Today's featured guests are author David E. Lucas and filmmaker and graphic designer Christopher Everett. David, welcome to the show.
Greetings.
David, are you with us?
Greetings. How are you all doing?
Very well. Glad to have you today. So let's go ahead and jump right on in.
Thank you.
Why don't you tell us about your book, It's Dark, But I Can Still See the Light.
It's Dark, But I Can Still See the Light is a book to inspire young people that one of the things that I had been through was learning disability, and I couldn't read or write on grade level. And people used to pick on me. People began to say I was successful. People began to say I wasn't great. But I knew I had an issue. I knew I couldn't read. I knew I couldn't write on grade level. So I had to add extra help. So they put me in special need classrooms. And, you know, and with that being said, when you're dealing with a school setting, your different kids have opinion about certain things. And, you know, they picked on me. They said I was this. They said I was that. But I eventually said, you know what? It was my fault. I was the reason why I didn't, you know, study. I was the reason why I didn't took the time out to be able to invest in myself so I could be able to read on grade level, so I could be able to write on grade level. And so I began to, you know what, take the time out and say, you know what, I'm going to study. I'm going to prime hard. And eventually I've been doing that for going on for like a year or so. And so they eventually saw, you know what, I'm going to push this young man into a regular mainstream classroom. And so, you know, and so that's what happened. And then, you know, and then, so, and the rest is up for you to read in the book, but that just, it just gives you a good little sample of what this book is about. It's Dark, But I Can Still See the Light.
Okay. So that's very interesting. So you said that you had a learning disability, you know, that made it difficult for you to be able to, you know, to read and write at grade level, but there was something on the inside of you that saw yourself as greater than the things that people were saying about you, and greater than the station that you found yourself. You know,
right.
Was there anyone outside that was, you know, that believed in you? You know, that was, you know, telling you, you know, you're more than this. You know, you're more than a conqueror. Or was that just something that was just burning on the inside of you, just a knowing of who you are? Where did that come from?
Well, it really came from just, you know, being humble. I grew up around a lot of ministers, a lot of bishops, a lot of pastors, and one of the things they always told me is that, you know, son, you know, you have to find the courage in yourself. You know, so you know, I had my mother, had my father, I had the support system around me, but you know, you ever got to a point in your life and you say, okay, well, you know, I have these people around me, but what am I doing? You know, how do I feel about things? So it, you know, really, it really wasn't about what they have done. It's really what I do. So I accept what they said, but I had to make sure that I found it inside of me so that I can be able to understand that, you know what, I can be different. I can be something changing. I can do that, those things, because I knew I believe in myself.
To me, that's just such an awesome and powerful testimony, you know, because, you know, so often, you know, sometimes we wait for perfect circumstances. And, you know, we know that the playing field is just not level. You know, we just kind of get what we get sometimes, you know, but it's up to us to decide what it is that we are going to, you know, to do, and we don't have to stay in the stations that we are. So that's such a powerful message that you are bringing. What was your inspiration for writing the book?
Well, really just the things that I, you know, just even going to learn disability, I believe that, you know, that each and every one of us have a story, even if it's just writing, music, filmmaking. I mean, just literally, we have a story, but it's really about how we come with that story. A lot of times, you know, we're afraid to be able to, you know, tell our story because we feel like we're going to be shameful. People are going to say this and say that. But you know, I literally just had to understand that, you know what, you know, I knew that I had that power. I knew I had that driven spirit inside of me that I can be able to keep pushing and keep moving and keep priming. So I knew that, you know, I'm going to tell my story, even if that means I have to be by myself, even if that means that people may not understand what I'm saying. But I knew at the same time that I knew that there's somebody going to read my book and it's going to impact their lives. So I just believe in, you know, if I can touch just one person, that all that matters.
Absolutely. That's awesome. That is awesome. So, I would say then that you were hoping to accomplish to accomplish the ability to reach people and to maybe encourage someone else to say, you know, hey, it doesn't matter where you are, you can be better. You're greater than, you know, your circumstances. You know, would you agree with that? Or was there a
different
message?
I totally agree with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So, you know, based on the feedback that you're getting now that the book is out, you know, do you feel that you have accomplished your goal? You know, are people coming to you and saying, you know, those words really changed my life. I really thought that this was all that I could be. Or, you know, you really gave me the encouragement and the inspiration to be able to step outside of this box that I am. You know, what kind of feedback are you getting from people?
I'm getting amazing feedback. It's feedback that really just blow my mind because, if I remind you, I am only 18 years old. And so
okay.
Most of my readers are young people. Most of the people I'm
mm-hmm.
targeting are young people. And so the things that they come back to me, I mean, one little girl not too long ago, she said, you know, David, you know, your book impacted my life so badly that I was going to kill myself. But just by me reading your book, it tells me I have something to offer.
Wow.
So, you know, just to see that, you know, other young people are moving me because they see that I am being as young as I am, telling the story that
mm-hmm.
I have. You know, it just impacts me. And so a lot of people say, you know, David, you know, why not do a movie, a mini movie
mm-hmm.
book? And I said, you know what, y'all just don't know. It was something that, you know, that was in the process of making.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and even seeing that type of feedback that I got from young people, even for young adults. I mean, saying that, you know,
mm-hmm.
I've been reading this book to my young child, and then see that
mm-hmm.
they, you know, they come to me with feedback now. You know, a lot of times kids
mm-hmm.
don't, you know, they don't want to come to their mother or father about situations. But
mm-hmm.
when they read a type of book that will be able on their level, they can understand
right.
that they have no issues with saying, you know what, mama, you know, I'm feeling kind of bad. I need help. I need, you know, I'm going
mm-hmm.
through this. I'm going through
mm-hmm.
that. And so that's what I've been trying to feed into our young people and see that they understand what I'm saying and how I'm saying it as a young man. It blows my mind. And so to see that one young girl that comes to me, I mean, it literally
Absolutely.
Inboxed me on Facebook and say, you know what, David? You know, I haven't purchased your book yet, but what happened is that on my website I have these breakdowns of my book from chapter
okay.
1 to chapter 5.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just by me telling the story of the actual book from the actual
mm-hmm.
of my videos, it changed her life. And so
okay.
now that gave her a point. You know, I need to buy this book because I think I need to change
mm-hmm.
somebody else's life because it changes my
Absolutely.
Life. So I
Absolutely.
Just do it because, you know, I knew that it was going to touch somebody's life. And now I know that I have really brought inspiration to somebody else's life.
Yes. You know, sometimes we don't know why we've been dealt the hand that we have been dealt. You know, we just get what we get sometimes, you know. And yet there is a greater purpose, you know. And so here, a situation that had been so challenging for you actually ended up becoming your life's mission, you know, part of your reason for being, of being able to encourage others and inspire others, you know, and to help others reach their own place of, you know, of freedom. That is so powerful, you know. And I'm curious about the, you know, your classmates. So they took you from, you know, special needs classes into mainstream, and then you've got a book that's coming out, and your, you know, your words are changing, you know, changing people's lives daily. And yet, you know, now you see these peers that had something negative to say, you know, and I'm wondering, you know, has their response towards you been different? You know, how are things now, you know, when you're dealing with your schoolmates and your peers and things like that?
Some of them changed and some of them didn't. And I really thought of it like this, is that, you know, there are certain people for you in certain seasons.
Mm. That's right.
There are a lot of people that only time they see you is when they see what come out of you. My God.
Yes.
And so mm-hmm. me as being a young man that had a story to tell, and that, you know, now they want to be cool with me and collected with me.
Mm-hmm.
But when I didn't show my story,
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
then, you know, they felt that I have nothing to offer.
That's right.
But when I
That's
begin
right.
to tell them that, you know, that I am greater, I have more to offer, I have, you know, I have this, I have that,
mm-hmm.
To be able to help you, then, you know, then they look at me a different, you know, a different way. But then I have some people that just still set in their ways that, you know, but he's still slow.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care how bad you
mm-hmm.
can put it, he's just still slow. But there are just
mm-hmm.
certain people that you know, that just not for you for that season. And
that's
I remember as a young man that my father always told me, he said, son, at the Last Supper, you know, they said that Jesus had someone that betrayed Jesus. But at the same
mm-hmm.
time, Jesus still fed him. And that's what I took my
mm-hmm.
own. So you know what? I'm still going to feed them because it's still at the end of the last time right now. And so I just really believe that, you know, that we're going to still have people that's going to hate us. We're going to still have people that's not going to like us. But we have to still
that's
keep
right.
pushing, still keep priming. We got to still feed
mm-hmm.
them because they're still at our table.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Such powerful words, you know, and such an inspirational young man. If you're just tuning in, you are listening to In the Spotlight, and I'm your host, Tamika Patrice Kane. And my guest right now is David E. Lucas. He is the author of It's Dark, But I Can Still See the Light. This is an 18-year-old man who struggled with learning disabilities and was barely able to read and to write, who decided he was going to rise above his station and do something else with himself. And he, you know, is now the author of a book, and he's empowering people. And if you missed it, you know, he was talking about a young lady who inboxed him and told him that she was on the brink of willing to commit suicide. But something he said in his book changed her life. You know, that is the power and the impact that words have. So I'm glad that you're tuning in. We're going to go on with our interview here. So, David, you know, were you a writer before this season, or, you know, was this the catalyst, this change that you went through, was this the catalyst that brought you into the world of writing?
This right here was the first reason why I started writing, because
okay.
I promise you, I never liked the English. I just
mm-hmm.
never did.
Okay, I understand.
But there was just something that driven me to be able to write for young people. Because a lot of times I couldn't mostly speak out my mouth. All I can
okay.
do is out of writing things. Even if it had been incorrectly
mm-hmm.
wrong,
mm-hmm.
I knew that I
mm-hmm.
can be able to write things out. I can express my feelings with writing. So
okay.
this right here was the one, you know, this book or even this story has really brought me in the writing world or the writing adventure,
mm-hmm.
the adventure for
okay.
me.
Okay. Okay. So currently you're writing in nonfiction. Are there
mm-hmm.
any other genres that you'd like to try?
There are a couple of things that I'm actually trying in. Like I said, one's gonna be in fiction. But I'm trying that, but I won't probably start that in probably until after I release about four or five other books. But I'm basically gonna start with nonfiction because a lot of times there are not a lot of young author books that's writing nonfiction. A lot of times we try to
mm-hmm.
fill stories with, you know, make believe, but I believe in this season that our young people need to hear truth.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that
mm-hmm.
they need to hear understanding, need to hear wisdom, need to hear substance. And so until ever God tell me to switch genres, then I will. But other than this season right here, I'm still stick with nonfiction.
Okay, all right. And that's, you know, there's a time and a season for everything. You know, and so, you know, for now, this is your voice, and this is what it is that you have to offer. But I will say, I do fiction, I do nonfiction, you know, but there's a place for both, and fiction can change lives too. You know, so I can even see that when you are ready to make that transition into fiction, that could still be very powerful works too. You know, because there are some people who won't read nonfiction, you know,
mm-hmm.
but there will still be a way to be able to fuse your voice into fiction when you're ready, you know, and when that season opens up for you, and it'll be just as impactful, you know, and we'll be able to change lives just as in the same way that your nonfiction does, you know. You write the story, you know, did you write it for you, or did you write it with the intent to become an author? You know, where were you in that process?
I wrote it because I really wanted just to impact lives. Because
okay.
even if there are a lot of million stories that just, you know, that matter of fact, I'm not saying this one, this because in the beginning, before this even happened, I had a meeting. It's something called IEP meeting. We have it once a year. And when I was in the meeting, I heard a statistic said that, you know, son, you are out of the 1 to 10 or 1 to 100 kids that be able to get out of special need classrooms. Because it's like this, when you go in, it's hard to get out.
Okay.
It's hard to
okay.
test out. So, you
mm-hmm.
know, and I said, you know what, this story right here needs to be heard. Even if
yeah.
it means just, even if it means me writing a book, it still needs to be heard. And so I really believe that I had this book right here or this story just to, just, you know, just to go out there and help somebody else.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. So is your desire to, you know, to write for a living, or is this something that you want to do as kind of a side thing, like a little hobby? Or, you know, what exactly are your aspirations where the writing is concerned? I mean, other than being able to just impact lives, you know, is there, do you want to go to school for it? You know, what's your goal?
This right here is some more like a, I wouldn't even call it a hobby. To really say it's like a second job to me.
Okay.
And because the reason why it's a second job, because I believe in the best in the people. And I say this, the difference between investment and sacrifice, when you invest in something, you're looking for a return. But when you sacrifice something, you can't get it back. So I'm investing in the people so they can be able to invest in me. And so that's really what I live by, as in, you know, just saying this is a second job to me, that I go to a 9-to-5 job. This is something I live by. Even go to school, you know, I still writing, I'm still thinking, you know, I'm still, you know, still in that process of a mindset, because even with my motivational speaking company, you know, that goes hand in hand. So that's what I think is a second job to me.
Okay. How has your life changed since the book was released? And when was the book released?
It released last year.
Okay.
My life changed tremendously. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I say it changed is because a lot of times people never knew that I was facing that type of hurt place.
Yeah.
A lot of times, you know, we as young people, you know, we go through things, and a lot of times we don't feel comfortable with telling people, you know, how do we really feel about situations.
Mm-hmm.
But when you feel that, you know, when people read your books, when they feel what they, you know, when they see you writing your videos or doing like that, you know, they say, you know what, man, I never knew you felt that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my life changed a bit. Now I'm very open. Now I'm very careful how I do things. You know, I'm very mindful now that since I am author, people are looking to see when you write the next book. So you know, my life has changed immediately, and it's an amazing feeling. It's an awesome feeling.
Okay, that's awesome. Why don't you tell us one thing that would have made your journey of publishing the book a little easier if you had known, you know, beforehand?
Patience.
Patience, okay.
Patience.
In what way?
A lot of times we rush things, and just because we have a story doesn't still mean it's for that season.
Yeah.
A lot of times we have a testimony, but it's not for that season.
Mm-hmm.
And so really, if I could just have enough patience enough to just wait it, because I knew that there was a certain type of, even when I wrote my first editing the book, I released it then. But if when I read it to myself over and over again, had other people come to me and said, you know, they admit you got an error right. They have some error, you know. So if I waited and not rushed it, then it would not have been. I wouldn't have to go through when paying another formatting, paying another editing, and things like that. So just really being patient.
Okay. So did you self-publish, or did you publish through a traditional vanity or small press?
I self-publish.
Oh, you did. Okay. All right. Now, are you the first author in your family, or are you from a family of writers?
And that blew my mind. I'm the first author.
That's awesome. That is awesome. So you mentioned that you have a public speaking, a motivational speaking company. Tell us about that.
Wow. Thank you for asking. It's I had it for 2 long years.
Okay.
And it's called Handful. It's a motivational company. Motivation company that I believe in. We have a slogan called "I'm putting my destiny one piece at a time." I believe that in this season that God has really called me for greatness. And so my motivational company is, you know, dealing with, you know, young people, dealing with schools, dealing with organization workshops, things like that, to go out to different schools and different events to be able to motivate young people, not just basically about my book, but life lessons. You know, seeing a young man to be able to talk to them at their age, you know, they're like, wow, I mean, this young man can, you know, just that educated to speak to them, I mean, motivate them a lot, their lives have changed. You know, that's really what, you know, Handful is about, to motivate and encourage young people and to get them back to the place they need to be. Because eventually we are still one puzzle piece. We are still, you know, we are still connecting with each other, even if it means taking the destiny at one piece at a time. So that's that's what Handful stands by. That's what Handful believes in, their mission is to motivate young people.
Okay. So I don't get a chance to, you know, to work with young authors very often, but you, as I'm talking to him, I'm reminded of someone that I interviewed last year, Randall Barnes, and I would suggest that you reach out to him, you know, another teenage author. And he does fiction, but it's still fiction with a purpose, you know.
Right.
And so you two have a similar mindset about reaching young people. And I think the thing that just impresses me so much about the both of you, because you're kind of right there on the same, you know, wavelength, you know, is that, you know, so many of the young people, we're just fed, you know, just negative images. They're not really even told that they can be anything wonderful, you know. And we see kind of, I'm going to almost call it a decline, you know, and the glorification of things negative, you know, but, so they're not encouraged to be great. They're not encouraged to be, you know, to be respectful, to be, you know, to maintain integrity and, you know, and things like that. And so, and yet here's someone, you know, of their own caliber, some of their own age, saying, you know, hey, it doesn't, you don't have to do what everyone else is doing. It's okay to veer off the beaten path. It's okay to, you know, to dance to the beat of your own drum. It's okay to be an original, you know. And I liken it sometimes as saying, you know, we are each designer's originals, but sometimes we don't always know that it's okay to be unique, to be special, you know, and that saying that is not a negative thing, you know, but that it's actually kind of a blessing, you know, in disguise. Mm-hmm. And so it's wonderful that you are willing to say, you know, hey, it's okay to just who you are, where you are right now is more than enough. You know, be you and be you unabashedly, you know. So I just love that. And, you know, so you just certainly just keep on doing what you're doing. Do you have any speaking engagements or book signings coming up where readers can come out and meet you?
Yes, I actually do. I'll actually be speaking at Bristol-Narg Elementary School in Darlington,
okay.
South Carolina. I'll be speaking, mm-hmm. at, like I say, with Handful as a motivational company. We'll be speaking there to be able to help motivate for their Black History Month program. And I have some other things in the making with some other book signing events and things like that. But like I said, if you go to my website at www.handfulctw.org, which is spelled handfulctw.org, you can be able to find out all the events that I have going on and what's happening. So, yes, like I said, we'll be connected in. And I actually do like to do many workshops online and Periscope things.
Oh.
So you can find all that stuff out on my website.
Awesome.
So you can be able to, so your young people can be able to be enhanced. And that's what we're actually doing.
Okay. So it sounds like there's a team of you that kind of get together and put this stuff together. Is that correct?
Well, yes, we're working on that. In the meantime, just really just me at this moment, we're working on that to be able to help enhance young people as a team. So we can be able to get things going.
Okay, that's awesome. So, are you? What state are you based in?
I'm based in Florence, South Carolina, the best state in the land.
All right. Okay. So, if someone was interested in having you come in, you know, to their school or you know their youth groups, you know, church and conferences and things like that, you know, how would they reach out to you, you know, to get you to come in and speak to their young people?
Okay, yeah, you can go to my website at www.handfulctw.org. You can fill out and go to the actual the top link that said booking. You click on that, and it's the information you need to read to, like, booking-wise and, you know, what we need and how we need things so we can be able to address you to the right people to contact. So you go there, you find information. I promise you, we are very quick responders. We don't take 2, 4, 5, 6 days to respond. We are very quick responders, and we will be able to help you. And one thing about us is that we're not about income, not about the money. We just want to enhance. So we want to help. We want to encourage young people. You know, if you really want a young person that will be able to impact and that will be able to inspire young people to get on their level, I promise you, if you just give us a call, I promise you we'll be able to help you. We'll be able to encourage your young people. I promise you, they will not come the same way they came in. And
all
that's
right.
What we believe and live by.
Okay. That is so awesome. So what can we expect from you next? Are you working on another book?
Oh, my, I'm glad you asked that. I am working. For the first book, I'm actually turning into a mini movie.
Awesome.
Yes, God, he's doing amazing things. And so I'm writing a script out, and you know, and I'm looking around to see who people can be able to help film and things like that. But I'm actually writing a script out for the actual movie, for the actual mini movie of It's Dark, Like, for young people.
Okay.
And I think it's gonna be an awesome story. to be able to be a format in the book, I mean, in the movie.
Absolutely.
And so the second book I'm writing, which is called The Process, everything we're going through is just a process. And that's powerful. I promise you, it's eating me up now. And the third and last but not least for this year,
was powerful.
Yes.
Pardon me.
For the third for this year of the this year coming, which is called Mark the Bully. A lot of times we, you know, we have this, you know, this bully that, you know, that we tend to let ruin our life, but really all he is really marked. So really not marked as in a person mark, but the mark as a marking mark, red mark. We are, I'm telling you, we are just going in, and and when I say we, I mean me, my Father, and my God. We are worshiping God because we believe in that He's doing something big.
That's awesome. That is so awesome. So why don't you tell our listeners, and before I get into that, let me just say this, you know, I know a lot of times people criticize, you know, the different, you know, how media focused, you know, we are as a society right now. But it takes different things to reach different people, you know, and part of being able to reach who we need to reach is being relevant where they are, meeting people where they are, you know. So while someone may not be willing to pick up the book initially, they may be willing to see the film and have their lives changed that way, you know. So I think it's absolutely awesome that you are, you know, that you're so forward thinking and willing to go out there and, you know, and stretch beyond, you know, the norm and step outside of the box, you know, and you just, as those ideas and stuff keep coming, just keep on pursuing them, because for every avenue, there are people waiting on that story, waiting on you to get there to provide for them what it is that they're missing. You know, people praying for an answer, and many times you have that answer for them. So you just keep on doing what you're doing, you know, and even when people don't understand, you know, God gives you a vision, and, you know, they may not even understand the full vision, but that's okay. They don't have to. You just keep on, and you work that vision through to the end. And I am so just over here, just so elated in my spirit about what you're doing, you know, feeling so proud of you, like I know you, and I don't, you know. And yet, you know, I'm just tickled pink about what you're doing. And so you just keep on doing what you're doing. Why don't you tell our listeners how they can find you on social media and where your book may be purchased?
Okay, well, you can find me on social media at David E. Lucas. If you ever watch any of my videos, you're probably like, yeah, I know that name. Yeah, because I say my name every time I do a video. This is David E. Lucas, Team Motivational Speaking Author. Yes, you can find me.
Okay, so the video. Okay, so hold on just a second then. Okay, so you're on, was that YouTube then? Because if you're doing videos, you're doing
YouTube?
Yes,
I'm on YouTube.
As David E. Lucas?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, all right, go ahead.
My Facebook is David E. Lucas as well. David Lucas 1061 1560. That's my Periscope.
All right.
Twitter is dark_light1. Instagram,
okay.
It is David_Lucas1.
Okay. And if you could offer any advice to an aspiring author, what would it be?
Never give up. Keep pushing, keep priming, just because it may seem hard in the beginning. There's still hope. There's still light in that tunnel. Because always remember that even if you may not have the full story right now, just wait. Be patient. Because I promise you, everything that God has promised you, it's going to come to pass. So just be patient and wait.
Okay. And those are such wise and sound words. David, you know, thank you so much for stopping by and speaking with us today. Certainly keep us abreast of your future works. We definitely want to support what you're doing, you know, and we wish you much success on your journey. You know, you're such an inspiration and so proud of what you're doing, and glad to have you on the show today.
Thank you.
Thanks. Before we bring on the next guest, let's hear a word from our sponsors.
Scores of authors from across the nation will autograph books on Saturday, April 30th at the 7th Annual Dayton Book Expo. In addition to book signings, the Ohio-based event includes sessions for aspiring authors, a kids' zone, and a free journal for book lovers. For details, call 888-802-1802 or visit DaytonBookExpo.com. Dayton Book Expo, where book lovers connect.
If you are just tuning in, welcome to In the Spotlight. I am your host, Tamika Patrice Kane, and we have just interviewed teen author David E. Lucas, who is talking about his book, It's Dark, But I Can Still See the Light. Such a powerful and inspiring young man with a motivational message, you know, that says no matter where you start, you know, it's just a stepping point. It's just a starting point, so you can rise from there. You know, so hope you got a chance to listen to that entire interview. If not, you'll be able to catch the archive. And as you know, on In the Spotlight, it's not just for authors, but it's also for publishers and literary professionals that can enhance the publishing process for authors. So I'd like to bring on our next guest, which is filmmaker and graphic designer Christopher Everett. Christopher, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you doing?
Very well. For starters, why don't you tell our listeners about your background in graphic arts? Let's start there.
Okay. Well, I have a degree in graphic design from King's College in Charlotte, North Carolina. Spent years doing graphic design and advertising for numerous clients, and I say about 2010 decided to use my advertising and graphic design background to get more involved in filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
So I started my own film production company, Spell Street Films, mm-hmm. back in 2010. And I still kind of use graphic design and advertising a lot, my films, with my films that I do.
I want to get to the film piece just yet.
Material.
Let's just focus on the graphics.
I will
let you talk about that. Yeah, okay. So I want to tie this in with some of the things that we're doing for the authors. Okay, so how important is it for an author to connect with a seasoned graphic designer? Because it sounds like you have a wealth of experience there.
Yes. Oh, well, it's very important for authors. I used to work with a wholesale book distributor years ago in Atlanta.
Oh, okay.
And I worked in the graphic design department, promo department. And you would have a lot of first-time authors, especially just, you know, doing self-publishing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they didn't know what to do in terms of advertising or doing graphics or not even just the book cover. You know, they would just throw something simple together.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I look at graphics, just like how I do film, it's all the same. I look at it as if I have a book or a film or whatever, and I'll look at it, the package and everything, and say, would I actually buy this book or film if I didn't know, if I wasn't connected to it at all? If the answer is no, then I have a problem.
Okay, you know, so then what types of services would a graphic designer provide to the literary community? You know, what should they be looking for?
A lot.
I think sometimes
the cover design. It's a combination of graphics and advertising. Pretty much the book layout design, the cover graphics, any type of advertising or marketing materials, flyers, posters, of those sort of things. It's all connected really to advertising and marketing.
Okay. Now, do you think that all designers can create any type of material, or is it important for someone to who works with specific genres, you know, as the authors are looking for someone to hire to do their graphics?
Yeah. Well, everyone that says they're a graphic designer isn't one, you know, so I would suggest to authors to really, really, when you're seeking out someone to do your graphics or design your book cover or any type of promotional materials that you might have, I would really check for references and also check for their portfolio. If they don't have a portfolio of actual book covers or anything in the literary market, I wouldn't deal with them. You want to check for portfolio pieces that, like if you're doing a book, you want to see book designs, book cover designs, things like that. So those are the things you really want to look for.
Okay. So how important is branding when it comes to having graphic work created?
It's very important. But like I said, you know, just like I always try to put myself in the shoe of the consumer because I'm a consumer myself. We're all our consumers, even if you're a writer. You still buy books yourself.
Yeah.
But you have to look at it from that angle. You know, when you go to the bookstore, you know, and you're looking at books, if the cover isn't right, if the advertising and materials isn't right, a lot of times you probably won't even get it by or even pick it up just to look at it to see what it's about.
Okay.
So you pretty much have to use that same mentality when it comes to your own publication. you know.
Okay.
And that's how I look at the whole branding thing. I look at it as being a consumer. Like, would I actually buy this product myself?
And okay.
That's how I look at it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So where should an author look to find graphic designers?
Well, it's a numerous of things. I know I've used plenty of times Behance, Behance.net. It's a great,
okay.
It's a great service where you can find tons of designers who are looking for freelance work.
Okay.
Behance.net is a great tool. I've used Craigslist in the past before.
Mm-hmm.
There are numerous places out here. I know people have suggested like Fiverr because
mm-hmm.
it's like real cheap. But you know, a lot of times you want to get what you pay for. So,
right.
But Behance.net to me is good because they have a wide variety of people on there. They have a lot of people that are actually in college for graphics as well. And I know I was in college. Yeah, when I was in college, you know, a lot of times I was willing to do work for pretty much cheap or free.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not
going to
pay the full price because you're in college. But a lot of college students out here do great work. They just need the experience to build up their own portfolios. You know, they might have a portfolio of just school projects, but they're looking for some real, real life stuff and also to build a working relationship with potential clients so when they graduate, they can get maybe some steady income.
Absolutely.
So I think Behance.net is a good, you know, way to use. Or if you have any community colleges or art and design schools in your area, you can reach out to their departments a lot of times. A lot of times you can work certain deals with some of the graphic design departments. Say, hey, you know, I'm willing to pay such and such, you know, for someone to do like a book cover or something like that, or be an intern. You know, so there's different ways you can really work it, you know, to your advantage.
Okay. So that's a very interesting point that you bring us to, and I'm going to touch base on that. It actually takes me right to my next question. So can anyone who dabbles in graphic design create book covers, or is that a very special skill set?
I would say it all depends on the designer. I think it's a very special skill set. Like I said, every graphic designer isn't that good of a designer. Some people are better doing logos. Some people are better doing, you know, book covers, marketing materials, et cetera. It all depends on that graphic designer. You know, every graphic designer isn't the same. Like I know some people that just do websites, really do logos. So it all depends on what you're looking for. And when you talk to the designer and you see what their portfolio, you know, consists of, you can tell what all a graphic designer can do based off their portfolio.
Gotcha. So what would you say is your area of expertise when it comes to graphic design?
My area, I would say logo design. Logo design and marketing material design.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you still for hire in that area, or are you no longer doing graphics for hire?
I'm pretty much no longer doing graphics anymore. What I do, like when people need the service, I work with a whole bunch of designers still for my own film work. So when people need service, I pretty much refer them to these guys, the couple of other graphic designers that still do great work. They do a lot of work
design,
for me as well. Hello?
That's quite an accomplishment. There are many authors who long to see their works on the silver screen. Can you tell us the process of connecting with a filmmaker?
Yes. Not only just adapting, not only is it just for adapting, you know, your work into a movie, also I think authors should use film in a variety of different ways. You know, making like a video press kit type thing. Or a book trailer, you know.
Mm-hmm,
a lot of people, you know, do those things as well because video and social media kind of go hand in hand. And I think it's, you know, I think, you know, authors can get creative with this thing. Like I said, you know, they can use video for a variety of ways, like creating an effective book trailer. And a lot of times when you can create a nice, you know, good book trailer, have it on your social media, you know, spread the word about it. A lot of people will gravitate towards that as well. So if you have, you know, a good video presence, you know, good graphic design and marketing material designs, you know, that can really elevate your book, you know, a long way.
Okay.
But
now,
you can also,
you
know, also people want to, you know, adapt their material, you know, into possibly a movie or a TV show. You know, those things is a process, you know. But there's different ways you can really use film and video, you know, to enhance, you know, your book or your publishing entity.
So does an author have to be seasoned in screenwriting, or does the filmmaker kind of aid in that process?
It all depends. You know, I've seen certain I've seen certain authors, you know, they would want to make their book into a movie. Some go ahead and tackle the script themselves, or others say, you know what, I don't want to do that. I want to get someone to write the script for me, or they might just consult. They might write the story, and then they'll get someone who actually does a screenplay to write it. It all depends on the author, and their confidence. You know?
Gotcha.
And it's, it's really up between that author and that producer who's putting the work together. Sometimes the author might, they might can do it themselves. You know, other times they might not want to do it, or they might can't do it. You know, it's really up to the author and the producer and the type of deal they're working out.
Okay. So, of course, you know, let's talk the money piece, because, you know, capital is a big deal when you're working with film. And how would an author go about finding the capital to get their works into film? What's the process there? Or is there a process?
Well, it all, you know, you pretty much want to, you know, sell the movie rights or whatever. There's really no cost for you other than, you know, as an author, other than, you know, your legal, you know, your legal help, your lawyer, you know, to make the deals for you. But, you know, an author, they can make, you know, $10,000 up to maybe $100,000 to, you know, sell or, you know, rent out the rights for their publication. You know.
Okay.
It's, there's very different numbers, you know.
No, go ahead.
You know, so, because I'm in the process now of buying some literary work. I'm actually buying an actual finished script, and I might be purchasing the rights for that. But it's not like $100,000. It all depends on, you know, that person's work. You know what they're willing to sell it for. You know, every price is different. You might can buy something for $5,000. You might can buy something for $20,000. So as an author, you can kind of dictate, you know, what you want to sell it for. If you're just a beginning author, but you have a, you know, a pretty nice, you know, novel or book, you know, you don't want to price yourself out, you know, because you're not that well known yet. But you still don't want to, you know, lowball yourself either. So it's pretty much, man, you have to really sit down and figure out what you really want to do and what you're trying to accomplish by selling, you know, your book to maybe make it into a TV show or a series.
Okay. So now, are you classified as an independent filmmaker?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Okay. And so what exactly does that mean, and what types of works do you produce?
Well, independent filmmaker means that I'm not funded by any major studio. I'm pretty much self-funded through private investors or just using my own money, those sort of things. Recently, so I produce pretty much documentary films and narrative films, short form and feature-length form as well.
Gotcha. Okay. So why don't you tell us about your film, Wilmington on Fire, and how you came to work on such a significant project.
Okay. Well, Wilmington on Fire is a feature-length documentary, and it's about the 1898 Wilmington Massacre / coup d'etat that happened in Wilmington, North Carolina, on November 10, 1898, in Wilmington, North Carolina. It is the event that pretty much set up the whole Jim Crow era throughout the state of North Carolina. And I kind of fell into the project. Like I think I was telling you earlier, you know, I thought about starting my own film company back in 2008, 2010. And I was doing just some research, and I think I just saw some stuff about the Tulsa Massacre that happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma, like Wall Street. And then just looking at stuff like that, and I saw something about Wilmington that popped up. I'm like, wow, something like this happened in my home, you know, state of North Carolina. Well, I never heard about this. So I just started researching and researching. Saw that no one did a project on it. He had several books written on it, but no one did a film on it. So I decided right then and there that, you know, I wanted to start doing my own films. I was tired of waiting on Hollywood to talk, you know, to show and do films like this. So I decided right then and there that I wanted to make this my first project under my film company.
Awesome. So what type of reception are you getting for this work?
Oh, it's going well. We premiered it in November of last year, last November. And we premiered at the Kukulores Film Festival in Wilmington, North Carolina. Kukulores is a big festival. It's one of the top 25 film festivals in the country. And it's been around for 21 years. and we mm-hmm. broke the film festival's record this past November for most attended film screening ever in its 21-year
That's
history.
That's awesome. Congratulations for that.
So we, thank you, thank you. I couldn't mm-hmm. believe it. You know, like we sold out about 4 days prior to the actual
okay.
screening. Yeah,
awesome.
And it's just been rolling ever since. You know, we've been doing mm-hmm. multiple screenings throughout the city of Wilmington, and we've actually started going to different places throughout North Carolina, like Charlotte, Goldsboro, Raleigh, Durham, you know, places
okay.
like that, and we've been packing them out everywhere. So we're about to start
going out of the
state.
Now, where are you going? Are you going to, like, the universities or what?
These just been private venues. You know, like I said, I'm an independent filmmaker.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. We've been just selling out private venues. I'll rent the venue, put the
okay.
money, the marketing materials behind. I do radio interviews, everything. And we
mm-hmm.
do, it's a combination of grassroots marketing, of social media plus boots on the ground type stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
You know, that's how we kind of market, you know, our films. We use a combination of social media,
mm-hmm.
radio, whether it's online or the regular
mm-hmm.
radio.
Okay.
And just boots on the ground, just getting in front of people, giving them flyers, talking to them about the film, you know, why it's important,
that's
giving out
awesome.
Free tickets here and there, you know,
okay.
doing certain contests and stuff. So those type of things you can really not just only use for film. You can do the same thing with books as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
A lot of the things that I talk about in regards to film, you can use the same strategies and method with book, because the things I'm using for film actually got the idea that I saw a lot of rock bands, indie rock bands, and a lot of independent hip-hop artists use.
Oh,
so I pretty
okay.
much got the idea to use a lot of my stuff while I'm marketing my
really?
Stuff. Got it from rappers.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
yeah,
that's awesome.
So yeah.
you know, is your goal ultimately to kind of have this film as part of, like, the Black Studies at universities or what? Like, what's your ultimate kind of goal where the film is concerned?
Yes. I want it to definitely be a part of I want it to be part of the school curriculum, especially throughout
mm-hmm,
North
okay.
Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've tried to actually implement, you know, this history into the school system in North Carolina for many years, but they never could just get it passed through. Hopefully
gotcha.
My film can change that as we continue to do screenings and share this work with everyone. I'm already getting schools hitting me up. We're actually going to do a film screening at a middle school, actually,
oh,
in Wilmington
really?
this Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going
okay.
to start doing those type of things, hitting up the school system, doing screenings at colleges and, you know, high schools, middle schools, et cetera. So those
mm-hmm.
are things
okay.
we're working on, because I really want this to be in every school and also every home if possible.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's so important to, you know, to know our history, you know, and
yes.
so much of it is just hidden, you know, and not so much made available to us in the way that we would need for it to be, you know, and
yes.
so I think that that's wonderful that you are, you know, that you are bringing it right back home and not, and I think sometimes we're so, our past in this country is so dark, you know,
yes.
that we don't always want to embrace it, but it is still a part of our story, you know. And so
mm-hmm.
if it's our story, it's our story, you know. And but even in the midst of all the darkness, you know, there's still so much positive stuff that came out of it, you know, through us as a people. And I don't think, especially with our young people, I don't think that they don't make the connection, you know. All they
mm-hmm.
see is, you know, just destruction and, you know, the things that we're currently kind of dealing with now, but they don't see that even in the midst of all of that stuff that we were a surviving people, you know, that we
yes.
we thrived even in the midst of, like, the most heinous circumstances, you know,
yes.
and we made it. I mean, we are here today because someone before us made it, you know, and I don't think
right.
they always get the significance of that. So I think it's absolutely, you know, just such powerful work that you're doing, you know, and wanting to bring our stories to film. And I love that you said that you're not just
yeah.
sitting back waiting on Hollywood to do it. You know, you
yeah, see, that's what
set.
I was doing.
And,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
and see, you see, that's what I was doing. Like, and I forgot to mention this before. I started off, I just didn't kind of fall into the film game. I was actually a model and an actor for years. Like, this was back
oh.
when I was in shape, you know. but I, you know, I had a lot of
okay.
industry connections already just doing acting
okay.
with you. You know, so I was like, you know what, I just kind of just started, stopped doing acting. I kind of gained a lot of weight, and I just didn't want to do it no more. And
mm-hmm,
I said, you
mm-hmm.
know what, you know, I was like, you know what, I'm tired of doing these auditions. I'm tired of, you know, waiting on Hollywood to tell certain stories. I got all these
mm-hmm.
connections already. You know, I got the graphic design advertising background. I know cinematographers. I know editors. I got all these people already I connect with. Let me just do my own thing. And, you know, that's what I decided to do.
That's so empowering, you know. Even that piece of it there, you know, to just not sit back and wait for someone else to tell you that what you have is significant, you know, that you kind of create your own ways.
Yes.
And I just, you know, that's such a, it's such a needed, you know, trait, you know, that we just, especially for the young people, it always kind of comes back there because, you know, they seem so lost, you know, and there's not enough, you know, of people saying, you know, but where you are isn't the sum total of your existence. You know, you can do anything you want to do. And, you know, so what? Someone closed the door in your face, believe in yourself anyway, and just make it happen. So I think that's so inspiring, you know. And
it is. And I tell people all the time, you know, whenever I do screenings or do interviews, you know, I'm from a small town. It's Laurinburg, North Carolina. This place is, we don't have anything. We just got a movie theater a couple of years ago. We don't have a Starbucks. We don't have a YMCA. You know, it's nothing there. No jobs, nothing. So, and that's why I say that whether you're an author, a filmmaker, or whatever, today's, the way the game is set today is open because of social media.
Yeah.
Like, I hooked up with so many people doing this film, and I'm living in Laurinburg, a small town. 20 years ago, I wouldn't be able to do that.
Okay.
But with social media, I can reach, you know, this endless amount of people. Like, when I put the film together, majority of the people that I work with, they live in New York, Atlanta, L.A.
Okay.
Like, my motion graphics guy that does the motion graphics stuff for the film, he lives in L.A., you know? So I never really get to see him in person, but we chat through social media. Hey, I need this done right here, like this. He'll send it to me in a couple of days. You know, the guy that does the music, he lives in Atlanta. You know, I hit him up, need this, upload to Dropbox. You know, I'll check it out and do it like that. So I run a whole operation living in a small town, a very small country town, but I still deal with people in New York all over the country to get a film done. You know?
That's awesome.
So the same can work for if you're an author, you know. So it's like all these things or all these creative things pretty much can run the same because of just the whole social media game has opened the door for a lot of creative people, especially a lot of independent creative people. That wasn't there before.
Absolutely. So what are you working on next?
Well, next I got a couple of projects. We're going to do a sequel, a follow-up to Wilmington on Fire, because still lot more to the story that we didn't get to put in the 90-minute documentary. So we got a follow-up that we're going to start filming probably this summer. And I might be doing, I think I was telling you earlier, I'm working on possibly buying the rights to this one film project. I have to kind of keep it under wraps, but it's a weird, eclectic, artsy vampire-esque film.
Okay.
So, yeah, I might be buying the actual, you know, movie rights to this literary piece of work. So that's still in negotiations right now. But if I get that, that would actually be my first narrative project that I'll be working on, you know, something that's non-documentary.
Awesome.
So I'm looking forward to that. Also, I'm also writing a book myself.
Good.
Yeah, I'm pretty much writing a book on, you know, how I made, like, my first successful independent film. You know, just some of the tools and trade, you know, things I've learned, you know, over the years by doing
So where can our listeners learn more about your films and your graphic services? Well, I guess that's not so much graphic services anymore, but you can at least refer them to some people.
Yes. Well, anybody out there, anyone that's writing a book or doing anything literary-wise, and you need some graphic service, I have great graphic design folks. They'll be willing to help you out. They can just email me at spellerstreetfilms@gmail.com, spellerstreetfilms@gmail.com. Email me, and if you have any requests for graphic design services, I can definitely hook you up with the right people. Hello?
I'm here. Go ahead.
Okay. And if anyone wants to know more about Wilmington on Fire, they can hit me up at facebook.com/Wilmington on Fire, facebook.com/Wilmington on Fire. Everything is on there. Screenings, past screenings, photos, trailers, clips, soundtrack, everything.
Oh, awesome. Okay. Very good. And how can we follow you on social media?
I'm on Facebook, Christopher Everett, Facebook.com/WilmingtonOnFire, Twitter.com/Wilmington1898, and Instagram.com/WilmingtonOnFire.
Okay. So I guess we'll go ahead and wrap it up here. So if you could offer a piece of advice to an author who wants to have their book turned into a film, what would it be?
I would say don't sell yourself short. If you want to turn your book into a film, I've seen a lot of self-published authors do this. I've seen a lot of them just say, you know what, I'm gonna make the film myself. I know several people who have done that, who are authors, and they were tired of just doing the Hollywood game. Like I said, Hollywood is tough.
Mm-hmm.
Getting into that
mm-hmm.
system is tough. And selling your work to them is even tougher.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a lot of people, and that's another reason why I wanted to do that book on how to do an independent film. And it's for that simple reason. But I would say align yourself with people who know how to make films, even if they're not a part of the Hollywood system. They may can help you do your own film of your own book. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
A lot of times that might be your best route to go anyway.
Okay.
You know, because Hollywood is real funny. I don't really like to play that Hollywood game. I would just tell, you know, a lot of authors to just surround themselves with people who know how to make films.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't break through selling your book to Hollywood, do it yourself.
Okay. That sounds like pretty sound advice to me. I mean, as someone who's done it, you know, and who's, you know, and selling out of, you know, screenings and things like that, that's certainly, you know, wise advice. Now, is there anything else that you'd like to just add before we wrap up?
No, just thank you for having me on today. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
For you giving me the platform, you know.
Yeah, I'm glad to learn more about your projects and what you're doing, and you are a wealth of information, you know, so, and I love these, and the fact that, you know, it's archived, so of course people can go back and listen to it, you know, again and again. So I thank you so much for imparting your wisdom to us today, and, you know, just certainly wish you much success with your film and all of your endeavors, you know, so, and be sure to come back on, you know, and let us know how you're doing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. I will do that. And I'll definitely be chatting with you as well.
Okay, that sounds good. Okay, so again, listeners, we have had authors David E. Lucas and filmmaker and graphic designer Christopher Everett with us today. If you missed any part of today's podcast, you can hear it in its entirety about 5 minutes after the show airs. Thank you for tuning in. We encourage you to support the authors who appear on the show. Of course, if you like what you hear, pass on the word to others. Supporting those in the literary arena is what we're all about. Join me next week for In the Spotlight with special guest authors Cotton, the soft-spoken poet, and Tavannah Elliott Clark at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on WAON, the Abundant Living Station. Until we meet again, make each day a great day on purpose. And don't forget to read a great book. Have a good day. Bye.